Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, July 10th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, updates on the Bridge Fire, Orleans and Marble Complex fires, and Bottawa Estuary Restoration proved successful in aiding threatened species. So stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming up.
A joint message from the North Coast Unified Air Quality Management District and partners. The Butler Fire, about 8 miles east of Orleans in Siskiyou County, and the Marble Complex in the Marble Mountain Wilderness in Siskiyou County, are active and continue to generate smoke impacting the region. The Red Fire in Del Norte County, east of Klamath, in the Six Rivers National Forest in the Siskiyou Wilderness area, is still fairly small but has the potential to generate increased smoke going forward. Smoke from the fires will transport southward, leading to increasing smoke impacts in the overnight to morning hours, with localized smoke pooling in the valley and river drainages, with some improvement in the afternoons and evenings. Coastal and inland areas of Humboldt, Del Norte, and Trinity County may see some smoke and haze aloft, depending on conditions. Air quality monitors in the current air quality index for communities should be viewed at the EPA's AirNow Fire and Smoke Map at https://fire.airnow.gov. The U.S. Forest Service Air Resource Advisors may have deployed on a fire and may issue smoke outlooks, which can be found at https://outlooks.wildlandfiresmoke.net/outlook. KMUD will continue to update as they come. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.
KMUD News spoke with Fire Captain Specialist for CAL FIRE Humboldt Del Norte Unit, Jordan Kilbury, for today's updates on the Bridge Fire.
Crews continue to reinforce containment lines and mop up interior hotspots, and we are actively demobilizing resources from this incident.
Everyone is encouraged to remain prepared for future emergencies by signing up for emergency alerts at humboldtgov.org/alerts or by visiting kmud.org under the Fire Resources tab. KMUD News spoke with Public Information Officer for Orleans Complex, Deanna Seal, for today's updates.
Crews are having really good success putting in containment features around that fire, particularly on the right side to a point, and then it's the bottom of the fire that they're working on. As well as partially the left fire. But there's a ton of good work happening, and that's really great. The crews along Butler from Peak to Nordheimer area for the Butler fire have gotten additional equipment and are protecting structures and communities with hose lay. And are staged and along the Salmon River Road for safety and potential changes in the road conditions from the fire moving down the Butler Creek drainage, as well as the Nordheimer Creek drainage as well. So that's kind of the situation that's going on for us. The south side is largely unmanned. As we get more resources, we'll have folks going out to scout potential features that can help us contain this fire as well.
The Butler Fire continues to cover 3,165 acres and is 0% contained. Siskiyou County Sheriff's Office has evacuation warnings and orders in place for the Butler Fire. An evacuation order has been issued for zones SIS-1703, no residents, SIS-1704, Butler Creek, Lewis Creek, Bloomer Mine Residence, and Nordheimer Campground, SIS-1803-A, no residents, and SIS-1707-A. Zone SIS-1707-B remains under a warning, but residents are advised to be prepared as the situation evolves. Residents should be prepared for potential traffic controls or temporary closures along the road between Butler Flat and Nordheimer Campground. Both Nordheimer and Oak Bottom campgrounds are closed. There are no evacuations, road closures, or road impacts from the Red Fire.
Basically, yeah, we always want to end a fire safety and prevention message, so you can help us out by checking your vehicles, tires, chains, just basic mechanics, and also making sure they're dead out so that new starts aren't started on Forest Service or other lands. So we really want.
Conditions are subject to change at any time. KMODE will continue to bring updates as they come. For the most current information on evacuations, visit protect.genesis.com or visit kmud.org and tap under the Fire Resources tab. KMODE News spoke with Public Information Officer for Marble Complex, Kevin Tidwell, for today's updates.
As of July 10th, the Marble Complex is currently 570 acres with an overall containment of 10%. The Marble Complex includes both the Jacket Fire and the Summit Fire. The Jacket Fire is currently 46 acres with 74% containment, and the Summit Fire is currently 524 acres with 11% containment. On the complex as a whole, we have a total of 467 personnel. Firefighters have been making good work at the Jacket Fire. The Jacket Fire is currently fully surrounded by control lines as well as hose lines, and crews have been working to mop up any remaining hotspots in the area to ensure that there's no threat of escape. Crews are confident that fire is under control, and that fire has been moved into a patrol status, which means that most of the personnel on that incident have been reassigned to other areas of the complex, and it's in a patrol status to where crews remaining on scene will monitor the fire area to make sure that no additional smokes or heats continue to threaten that area. Due to the diligent work of firefighters on the Jacket Fire, evacuation warnings and orders have been altered covering the Jacket Fire. The evacuation order for the area on top of the Jacket Fire has been reduced to a warning. So we ask that residents please check with the Office of Emergency Services in Siskiyou County for updated evacuation information. The Summit Fire continues to burn in the wilderness. Crews are making good progress on the Summit Fire as well. Several hotshot crews have been flown into the Summit Fire due to its location in a remote and rugged area of the wilderness. Crews have been working to construct control lines right along the fire's edge on the northern side of the fire. They have been successful in putting in the hand line, which connects both the heel and head of the fire. So the full northern part of the fire has been contained with a hand line, and crews are working to mop up hotspots along that to ensure that there's no further growth to the north. We have flown in several other hotshot crews within the last day or so, and they are now working to connect control lines from the western edge and moving southward. The southern edge of the Summit Fire continues to be the most active of the Summit Fire, and crews are looking for places to go as direct as possible along the fire's edge while also providing for firefighter safety.
A forest closure order is currently in effect due to the Marble Complex fire. Residents and visitors are asked to avoid these areas and remain vigilant of changing fire conditions. For more information about closures, visit the Klamath National Forest website. Also visit siskiyoucounty.gov/emergency services for more information on evacuation warnings. KMODE will continue to bring updates as they come. For the most current information, visit kmode.org under the Fire Resources tab. Recent monitoring efforts reveal that Badawa Estuary, Mad River, Restoration Project has successfully created a vital habitat for threatened species, marking a significant milestone in regional conservation efforts, Jordan Pangelinan reports.
California Trout, a nonprofit organization, works to revitalize waters for resilient wild fish and a better California. They believe that abundant wild fish indicate healthy waters and that healthy waters benefit all Californians. With more than 60 large-scale conservation projects underway in tandem with public policy efforts in Sacramento, the 9 regional offices work to advance their cause through a 4-pillared approach to conservation: science, restoration, community engagement, and advocacy. On July 8th, Caltrout announced that the Badawa Estuary Restoration Project had been successful in providing a natural habitat to numerous threatened species, according to their new monitoring data. This 9.3-acre project was designed by Northern Hydrology and Engineering and completed in partnership with the McKinleyville Community Service District in 2022, which had helped transform former wastewater percolation ponds into floodplain habitat that is now successfully supporting a thriving ecosystem. KMUD News spoke with Mary Burke, the Caltrout's North Coast Regional Manager, to understand more what these findings mean for both the community and the fish.
So the Badawat Estuary Restoration Project was constructed in the end of 2021 and into 2022. And what it did was take an opportunity on McKinleyville Community Services District land to remove some old percolation ponds out of their wastewater treatment system and return that land back into a natural piece of the Badawat River. So we constructed a channel that connects to the river and fills and empties daily with the tide, and it connects back to an area where we built a pond, and then we put a bunch of native vegetation into the system.
Some of the challenges that came along the way when monitoring this project was a sediment, which is weather and temperature impaired, meaning sediment that could move after a rainstorm could move progress in that area. Burke has more on the issue.
One of the main challenges is that the Badawat is sediment and temperature impaired. And so as we explored different options for what to do with this area, there was a lot of concern over sediment just filling in the channel, and, you know, then we would have done this project and the habitat would have been wiped out. Because if you visit the lower Mad River or the lower Badawat, you will see that there's, after these storm events we have, you can get inches of new sediment being placed on the floodplain. But the engineering work by Northern Hydrology and Engineering, Rose Patinaud, proved successful. And so we have weathered every winter, every summer between 2022, the past 3 years, and the channel is open. It is still operating as designed. And the fish results prove that this is really important habitat. In fact, there is really no other habitat like this in the lower Badawat. It's a place for the young juvenile salmonids to get out of the main flow of the river during the winter. And that's when they can pop into this pond and they can grow. In fact, they grow really fast, like almost a millimeter a day, which is just remarkable. And that's because they don't have to fight the current and there's plentiful food available. So these features really do work. The restoration community has built a number of them up and down the North Coast and, you know, throughout the state. But right here in the Badawat, this is a really important feature for what is otherwise a pretty channelized river in the lower system.
Post-restoration monitoring was conducted by Dr. Ward at California State Polytechnic University of Humboldt. Results revealed that the site is functioning as scientists hope. Ward was able to bring students to sample the site regularly since before construction, allowing researchers to document the ecosystem change before and after restoration. From the press release sent by Caltrout, in quote, throughout 25 sampling events from January 2023 to May 2025, researchers documented more than 15,500 individual fish representing 17 different species at the restoration site. The vast diversity of species included threatened Chinook and coho salmon, threatened steelhead trout, state species of special concern coastal cutthroat trout, and endangered tidewater goby. It has been an amazing opportunity to follow along with the Caltrout project from the initial planning stages to follow-up monitoring after implementation, said Dr. Darren Ward, Department of Fisheries Biology Professor at Cal Poly Humboldt, in quote, Caltrout's funding for monitoring allowed me to hire a crew of students for field work, providing critical work experience as they start their careers, end quote. This project is located on the ancestral lands of the Wiat. Caltrout also worked with tribal staff to include cultural knowledge along the plans of this restoration project. The project helped deepen the relationship between Caltrout and local tribes in the area.
Yeah, so this project area is within Wiat
ancestral territory. And, you know, throughout the project, our relationship and the ways of working together grew. There was some work done with staff from the Wiat tribe to help us with our revegetation palette, like which types of plants might be culturally important to include in the planting design and layout. So we did that work, but I would say the real engagement has picked up through the project, and then has this project really catalyzed more and deeper relationships with local tribes. So there's, in addition to the habitat element of the project, we built a public access feature at the end of School Road where it intersects with Ocean Drive. And at that location, you can come out and view the interpretive signs that were developed with the Wiat tribe and also with local indigenous artist and cultural practitioner, Almy Allen. It's really, it really brings a true place-based message that helps weave, you know, the ecological stewardship and traditional ecological knowledge, maybe you could say aspirations for our landscape, and what, you know, we were able to do together, which is, you know, tell the story of creating habitat to benefit future populations or current populations of wild fish.
Achieving successful outcomes, it motivates nonprofits like Caltrout to continue collaborating with resources such as the McKinleyville Community Service District, fostering a cohesive environment that benefits both the community and local fish populations.
It's a reinforcement of the theory that, you know, to undo some of the legacy impacts we've had, some of the ways in which we have altered the river's ability to occupy a floodplain, to move around, you know, to create habitat, these types of projects help bring that function back online. So we, you know, we have to work within constraints, you know, the modern constraints that we have. But when you have a landowner like McKinleyville Community Services District, which projects like this fit perfectly alongside their operations on this landscape where the floodplain is allowed to flood in the winter and creates, you know, a rich habitat, we then, you know, come in with a partner like that and we can build something that really enhances that habitat for the fish. So projects like these, you know, they show us what we continue to learn about these little fish, that they need these features on the landscape. And then the relationships that are built throughout the process, you know, they show us that there's such opportunity for the next generation, you know, a restoration generation who's really focused on this balance between our human landscape and the landscape that keeps, you know, rivers and fish and all the aquatic and riverine dependent species healthy and happy, you know, and that, and the public access, you know, is the benefit for people that we also get to visit the site. And it's, I'll say it makes me happy to visit there. It's a beautiful place, to make it a little destination on your walk or bike ride.
Caltrout hopes with the results of this project, it will lead them into offering more habitat nurseries for the young fish population along the coastline.
Well, every bit of habitat matters. There's been a lot of focus on habitat for salmonids up in their spawning reaches. At Caltrout, we have tended to work more along the coastline in estuaries, and this is, you know, the nursery for these young fish. And so without, you know, without a healthy nursery, the population can only be so successful. So it's our goal to bring more of this nursery style habitat online. We have a project that is going to construction within the next year or two in the Elk River. We have a large project up north on the Redwood Creek system on Prairie Creek, which is just upstream of the estuary. We've just started working in the Redwood Creek estuary and have a project down in the Eel River estuary. So we've got a lot of these habitats that we're working to bring online, and it's critical for the life cycle of these young salmonids. So it's going to be exciting to see how the populations might rebound into these local systems because of the habitat that's becoming available.
This site isn't just for scientists or monitoring. It's a place for the whole community to explore, learn about their environment, and discover how nearby ecosystems both impact and are impacted by our daily lives.
Well, I can't say enough about how important it is to have a landowner like McKinleyville Community Services District that is supportive of this work. Their staff and their board have always been on board with this project and very proud of it. So we are looking to come back to them with a phase two and with a deeper set of coalition partners with local tribes, agencies, and other nonprofits to continue planning and moving forward with a phase two at this site. And I'll say the community at large really shows up for this area. In fact, there's a local neighbor, Martin Joaquin, who has showed up to every single stewardship workday that we've held down in this area. About a month ago or so, we planted some native plants, and he makes it out there at least once a week or so and is watering those plants, and they're thriving. So there's, it's a really special spot for the local neighborhood. And when I visit, I see people coming, on their bikes or taking long walks or jogs and just visiting this area. So been pretty powerful for the community.
In addition to their work with Caltrail, Burke is also a candidate for the 5th District County Supervisor position. They previously spoke with KMUD News about their candidacy and the vision they hope to bring to the role. Burke further explained how involvement in projects like this aligns closely with their goals and priorities as a prospective county supervisor.
Yeah, it's projects like this that have really helped me come to understand how we can move forward with balance. This site is really important as working lands, and there's also room here to move forward with conservation objectives. And we do that in community. When we do that in community, we have outcomes that build relationships and really lead to these durable solutions and great partnerships that lead to future work. So, it's that kind of thinking that I'm bringing into my candidacy for supervisor. So, yes, I am dedicated to that, to my campaign and to hopefully being successful there.
The results suggest that reconnecting rivers to their floodplains can contribute to restoring ecosystem functions by providing habitat species such as salmon, bay pipefish, and starry flounder. These efforts also offer valuable learning opportunities for future restoration practitioners. For more information about the Badawa Estuary Restoration Project and Caltrout's other restoration efforts on the North Coast, visit caltrout.org under the North Coast tab. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Some tribal nations are among the most remote communities in the country, and the rural health care shortage has hit them especially hard. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel reports that one tribe in Nevada has found a solution, a doctor's office on wheels.
It's a clear morning in Lovelock, Nevada, a small desert town about 90 miles northeast of Reno. It's also home to the Lovelock Paiute tribe, which has a 20-acre reservation on the edge of town. I'm at a tree-shaded park, where the tribe is hosting its annual health fair. There's live music, jewelry vendors, information booths, and food trucks. There's also a vehicle that looks like a large blue and white motorhome, idling on the edge of the park. But inside are two patient rooms and a center lab with a blood draw station. It's a mobile health clinic brought here by the Fallon Paiute Shoshone tribe, located about an hour away. Gabriel Bourne just stepped out of the vehicle.
Having access to this, I was able to get some shots I needed, and you know that I should probably had a long time ago, but didn't get.
Time and travel are the biggest barriers, he says. Bourne's a Fallon Paiute Shoshone member, but he lives in Lovelock, so seeing a physician in Fallon is a two-hour round trip. So when Bourne, who hadn't been to the doctor in more than a year, realized he was steps away from a mobile clinic, he took full advantage.
I'm able to get my eye appointment, which I've needed glasses for a while, along with some cancer screening setups and follow-up with the doctor to see labs and everything else.
Accessing quality healthcare has long been an issue for tribal nations, especially in rural areas. The Federal Indian Health Service has less than 100 hospitals and medical clinics nationwide, all to serve about 2.8 million American Indians and Alaska Natives. And most facilities suffer chronic staffing shortages. Some of the highest vacancy rates have been felt by the Navajo Nation, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Phoenix, Arizona, and Billings, Montana. John Pichon is the director of the Fallon Tribal Health Center, which runs the mobile clinic here at this fair. He says the lack of access was amplified 5 years ago during the COVID-19 pandemic.
A lot of healthcare facilities were being shut down, and with all the services being closed, we needed something to go out to the communities.
For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
The Yurok tribe in rural Northern California is catching up to the digital age. Like many tribal communities that are located in remote regions, the Yurok Nation has gone without high-speed broadband internet, but that's changing. Christina Onnested reports.
Where I grew up, there wasn't any power and phone lines, no connectivity at all.
Shannon Holbert is board president of YTEL, Yurok Telecommunications, the first-time provider of broadband internet on the Yurok Reservation and surrounding communities in Northern California's Redwood region. She says the multi-million dollar project will create more than 200 jobs and make a world of difference.
This creates a reason for people to move back to the reservation because they have that ability to have access to connectivity and be able to have jobs anywhere that they can work remotely from the reservation and still be part of, you know, their everyday reservation activities and communities and all of those things. Students are going to be able to have access to online collaboration tools.
A Census Bureau report last year found Native American communities lag behind the rest of the nation in broadband connectivity. 90% of U.S. households have access, compared to 70% of Native communities. Holbert says it's largely because Native American reservations are remote in rural areas where there remains a digital divide. The YTEL broadband project was made possible through federal and state grants. Christina Onnested, National Native News, California.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Lisa Music, and thanks to our reporters, Jordan Pangelinan and Antonia Gonzalez. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. KMUD News is online, and you can find us at kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commute. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can call us at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.